Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
You are a human animal. You are a very special breed. For you are the only animal who can think, who can reason, who can read.
From KCRW Santa Monica, I'm Michael Silverblatt, and this is Bookworm. Today I'm honored to have as my guest John Ray, whose new novel, Low Boy, has just been published by Farrar, Straus & Giroux. His first novel, The Right Hand of Sleep, and his second, Canaan's Tongue, precede Low Boy. And I thought, well, I'm going to start out in the most direct, but I suspect risky manner possible.
Uh-oh.
That is to say, I love the language of schizophrenics. I remember reading, maybe when I was even in high school, that's how long back it goes, a book called Three Christs of Ypsilanti,
mm-hmm.
in which three people, each of whom believed himself to be Christ, were brought to a central insane asylum in Ypsilanti, Michigan,
yeah.
and they were allowed to confront one another in the suspicion that three separate Christs would have to either acknowledge that they were delusional or come to convert one another.
And what happened?
Both. but it made me aware when I read it that whatever the truths about schizophrenia and the unlikelihood that the things that R.D. Lang believed were true, that the language is extraordinary. This novel, Low Boy, has at its center a boy who has committed a violent act, has been in a some kind of reform services medical place, has escaped, is on his way to finding out where he can call home, not at all sure where that will be. He's in love for different reasons with the subways, and he likes to ride them. As we meet him in the first chapter, he's had a somewhat violent encounter with a Sikh
mm-hmm.
on the subway. And at first I was very nervous about reading the book because it seemed to have a built-in thriller plot of a boy being chased through the subway as his meds run out. But that didn't seem to be the real subject of the book at all. The subject seemed to be language and the way that it creates reality, realities of all sorts. So I wondered how you came upon an interest in schizophrenia.
Well, there were a number of things that interested me about schizophrenia and that compelled me as an author to want to explore it really centrally in a novel. And in my first two novels, Right Hand of Sleep and Canaan's Tongue, there are also elements of mental illness. But in Low Boy, that really comes to be front and center. Certainly the unique approach to language and to metaphor and to ideation that schizophrenics have was a very strong attractor for me in thinking about writing that. You know, I think as a writer, one is excited by subject matters that might permit one to test the limits of one's own use of language. And that's one of the things that's most exciting about writing for me,
mm-hmm.
to see where the language will lead me. And in the same way that schizophrenics in conversation can be led and can lead their companions into very unpredictable territory, I found that writing about a schizophrenic character continually surprised me.
Well, it's not just mental illness that is incipient in the first two books. It's language-driven writing, language-driven to extremes, and people using language at an emotional breaking point that represents that breaking point.
Yeah, that's certainly true. I can't conceive of writing a novel in which extreme states of mind were entered into or extreme events were experienced in which the language didn't reflect that by also going to extremes. And that's just something that is fundamental to writing novels for me. I'm just very excited by language and the ways in which paying close attention to the sound of what you're writing can cause you to surprise yourself and take the plot and the sort of narrative in directions you would never expect it to go.
Do you identify with outsiders?
I think that every writer, if not every artist, does. You know, I don't think that good writing can happen from the center of any sort of social situation. I think there's always a quality of being above or behind or below the significant events, a quality of observation or even of voyeurism that is present in all engaging writing, I think.
Yeah, because I deeply, deeply do. And so there's some kind of thing, you know, in me when I'm reading a book with a hero who is in some way outsider, whatever it was that caused me to imagine more deeply or read more complicatedly, I call it my outsider part, and I identify it with people who are at external extremes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I often think that... I've often tried to identify for myself what it is about certain novels, certain books, certain films, certain works of art that really, really engages me and kind of astonishes me. And I've never been able to come up with a satisfactory term for it other than maybe strangeness. There's an inherent strangeness to art that excites me and particularly to books that excite me. And I think that strangeness, that kind of foreignness, this sense of an unfamiliar world that's continually surprising and also magical in a sense, can only happen from the point of view of an outsider.
But how did you get your idea for the voice?
Not from any one place. How should I put this? The voice not only of the character Lowboy, but also in a larger sense of the narration of the book, since it's a sort of a close third-person narration, was a synthesis really of a few different sources or approaches to schizophrenia. One was reading a lot of primary text. I mean, there's one book in particular that was hugely influential on me, and it was a memoir written by a turn-of-the-century German.
Called, Dr. Schreiber?
Yeah, Memoirs of My Nervous Illness by Daniel Schreiber. And that book is just incredible. It's really, I mean, as a literary document and also as a medical document. I mean, Freud famously said that Schreiber should win the Nobel Prize for that memoir. So certain books like that were very useful. Also reading transcripts of these collected various sort of writings by schizophrenic patients, none of whom maybe had the sophistication and the literary qualities of Schreiber, were very useful to me. And also just living in New York City and riding the subway a lot, one encounters, unfortunately, a great many mentally ill people who simply are homeless and have no place to go. And conversations with a number of people that I met on the subway and on the streets of New York had a big effect on the way, particularly on the way the character Lowboy converses with other people, the kind of conversations he has.
Because I remember one night when I was a student in Buffalo, you know, the nights get very cold.
I know, because I actually grew up in Buffalo.
Oh, uh-huh. And at University Plaza there, I remember I'd gone at night to get a paperback book and was walking back to the campus, and a woman standing next to me, hearing the hum of the power lines, mm-hmm. you know, and also in those cold night airs, the traffic lights make clicking noises.
Yes, they do.
And she turned to me and she said, "Stop making that sound." But I remember always feeling that the thing that I prize most in difficult narration is that fusion of foreground and background,
mm-hmm.
of what noise the human makes and what noise the night makes. And that's, I guess, for me, part of the power of this book. Here we are in the subway, and so much of the double-noted sound as the doors close, and he comes to identify, does Bill Heller, with his own emotional states, his sense of safety or freedom of having made it away from the police, or,
yeah.
you know, he has invented enemies and real ones. And so the world is larger because he can see and hear anything in it,
yeah.
anywhere.
Well, for me, that's one of the fascinating things about schizophrenia, and one of the things that drew me to Loboy as a character is that for him there is no clearly identifiable membrane between his interior life and the environment in which he finds himself. I always imagined it while I was writing the novel as a yoke that's been pierced, you know, and that yoke is his sense of self, and he's just bleeding out through these wounds in his psyche into the world around him to the point that he no longer can differentiate between what he's feeling and what the world is going through. And from there, it's only a short step to his delusion that by changing his own mental and emotional and physical state, he can change the state of the entire world and save the world.
Will Heller, Loboy, is making his way toward a woman. He's come to believe that he can avert the world's ending by having sex.
That's right.
For the first time. And
as many adolescents do, actually.
Yeah.
maybe, I know that I did.
Yeah, well, maybe that's true. I mean, maybe...
It may be true, yeah.
Maybe the world will fail to end as long as adolescents have sex somewhere.
we can only hope so.
Yeah, no, clap if you believe, you know.
I mean, safe sex, preferably. I don't think that Will Heller's a role model for any of these things.
Yeah, but... He's traveling then towards some kind of composite of his mother and his girlfriend. And the first person he meets seems to me to be one of the things that first convince you that this book is really good. he meets a woman who calls herself Heather Covington. She is a homeless woman who uses the passport of a blonde 12-year-old girl as identification. She calls herself Heather Covington, but her name to the police is...
Rafa Ramirez.
And she seems deeply and wonderfully invented. I didn't recognize... her type from the battalion of homeless characters that get invented in movies and television and novels. Yeah, it's where you say, okay, you know, nothing in this book is going to be as you expect it to be. So tell us about Heather. Where did you make her up from?
It's very interesting that you say that she seems so thoroughly invented, because she really is, of all the characters in the book, I drew the least on people that I'd known or on ideas that I'd had of how these various characters should behave. I'm not sure where Heather Covington / Rafa Ramirez came from exactly. I mean, physically, she was based on a few homeless women that I spoke to in the course of research I did around New York City. But she really was just one of these characters that just seemed to inhabit me for a while, and that I seemed to be pulling out of the ether. I mean, she surprised me and fortunately convinced me also as I was writing her, and I actually didn't have to change a line of the scenes with Heather Covington?
Because, you know, she seems, I don't know, both tender and beautiful and particular and mythological all at the same time, and mean, you know, and doesn't seem like anyone's garden variety story about homelessness, you know?
Yeah, well, there were various garden variety stories that I was trying very hard to avoid in writing the novel. A lot of stereotypes that I was trying to sidestep, if possible. Various ideas about homeless people, first of all, but also, of course, even more centrally, a lot of stereotypes about schizophrenia itself.
Yeah, definitely. I'm Michael Silverblatt, and you're listening to Bookworm from the studios of KCRW. I'm talking with John Ray, author most recently of Low Boy, published by Farrar, Straus & Giroux. We'll continue after this short break. I'm Michael Silverblatt, this is Bookworm, and I'm talking with John Ray about his novel, Low Boy. Now, she knows the first of the places underground.
Heather Covington does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That will be being brought to, climactically, to a kind of underground throne or incarnation station, you know, an abandoned station. And one hears the stories of the underworld, you know, of lost and abandoned railroad stations.
Yeah.
And also friends I have who live in New York tell me that their little boys take them on, you know, railroad trips.
Really?
Yeah. Liking to ride at the front of the car and tell stories and enter conversations with conductors. That the mapping of the underground of the subway in New York is part of childhood fantasy.
I think so. I mean, it always was for me and persisted to this day, which is probably part of why I wrote the book. Somehow the notion of a secret city below the city, and particularly with New York City for some reason. I mean, other cities like Paris have their famous catacombs, which are also, of course, incredibly fascinating. But in the case of New York, for a long time there was a legend in Chinatown that there was this secret subterranean Chinatown that was much more Byzantine and widespread than the Chinatown above ground.
And connected all the restaurants.
Right, exactly. Yeah, yeah, that they all the restaurants shared one enormous kitchen underground, which they may do. I'm not entirely sure that they don't. But and then, of course, there's been the urban legend of the underground river, which I also made use of in writing Low Boy. And all of those things were incredibly fun for me.
Leslie Fiedler, a literary critic, you know, used to say that the same archetypes that animate great art also animate great junk. You know, they're the same. You know,
that's true.
Yeah, and that one and yet, you see, this is me, but I don't really like junk. You know, junk isn't my thing, you know.
Sure.
Unless I'm sure that a thriller is going to be preposterously good. You know, I guess I kind of like Patricia Highsmith. But okay. I tend to stay away from them. You know, I don't want to find out. They don't interest me enough. Whodunit is not a question that needs an answer for me most of the time.
I feel the same way.
Yeah.
And actually, the thrillers that I read, like Raymond Chandler or Patricia Highsmith, or you know, the really great books by John Le Carré also, I'm not reading those really for the plot.
Yeah.
I'm reading them for the mood and for the tone and the kind of charge that language happens to have.
So this has You know, if I were to summarize it or book jacket it, you know, some of the tone of a movie of the week, you know, escapee, you know, maniac child takes prisoner a young girl and
has to be a sexual captive.
Yes, has to be caught before his meds run out. I mean, you know, a dozen.
Yeah.
And yet there was something kind of incandescently moving about it, and that I wouldn't say despite itself, but I would say that that question, am I reading a junkie book or a haunting one, seemed to be part of what was exciting about the book.
Yeah.
Is the author going to let me down and let this subside into formula?
Or a sentimentality.
Or sentimentality or sensationalism.
Yeah, well, that's the big danger, certainly. I see what your question is now. It's a bit of a mystery to me exactly what attracted me to the thriller structure. But I do think that in the course of my reading certain thrillers, you know, by which I'm thinking of books by Raymond Chandler or some of the Dashiell Hammett novels, like Red Harvest, for example, or later some of the finer books by John le Carré, I always sensed that there was a potential there for an expression of emotion and idea that the authors were turning back from at the last minute, which in a way created tension. I mean, it's something that Ernest Hemingway also does in some of his novels. The form just seems suited to me to the expression of a certain type of existential sadness. And certainly Low Boy's story always struck me as one of the saddest that I was capable of describing. Now, the danger then arises of slipping into the maudlin or the pathetic, and that was a tricky dance to dance. But maybe the simple answer is just that I always wanted to write a thriller, and this is the type of thriller that I'm capable of writing. Mm-hmm. When you really try your hardest to avoid the standard cliches of the genre, you end up with a curious sort of hybrid, and I think that's what Low Boy became.
What is the upper level of the hybrid? If you know, for my sake, you're saying that I'm saying that the lower level is a thriller. I'm not sure that it is for other people. But what is the?
Well, if you were to if you were to conceive of it that way, and the lower level were a thriller along the lines of The Lady in the Lake, let's say,
mm-hmm.
the upper level, I mean, this sounds horribly megalomaniac or arrogant on my part, but the upper level might be something along the lines of Portrait of the Artist as a Young Man, mm-hmm. which was a very significant stylistic touchstone for me in writing this book.
Interesting. And also maybe The Myth of Persephone.
Sure, yeah.
The king of the underworld going to kidnap Spring.
Of course,
and
yeah.
bring her to his realm. That's somehow also there's some Peter Pan in here.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, the boy who stays young.
Mm-hmm.
And also the idea, you know, how to put it. That feeling before you know you're an artist, where you think you might instead be a schizophrenic.
I definitely know what you're talking about. I felt that.
And then also the thing that many poets feel, that their gift for language has been all along a form of borderline schizophrenia.
There are times when I won't say a gift, but there are times when an attraction for and a sensitivity to certain types of language can strike one as dangerous, I think, as being a sort of the first breadcrumb of the breadcrumb trail that leads straight into the institution.
Right. Yeah, no, and it's sort of like that strange thing, lurid and cheap and vulgar, but unforgettable, that harnesses the stories of Edgar Allan Poe.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, horror stories partake almost all the time and simultaneously of an incredible vulgarity and yet a loveliness beyond words.
Yeah, I mean, it would be easy, of course, if one never read the stories of Poe, but simply heard them summarized, to dismiss them as wildly improbable childish junk.
Uh-huh. And you know, also, I guess somehow that to a child, junk can be great, great art before you've learned any criterion or hierarchy.
Absolutely. It was for me.
Yeah. And so I guess the power of the book is in that mixture for me of high and low, mm-hmm. Of junky and ecstatic.
Yeah.
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 That was part of the excitement of writing it for me also. Although I didn't really think very consciously about the play with genres or high and low while I was writing it. So that's the type of thing that might initially attract me to experimenting with a certain direction. But once the book has really begun, I'm far too I feel far too much compassion for the characters and in a way for the reader to continue that sort of play. I then feel as though I'm really now working in the service of the potential of the book, what the book could be if I can only write it well enough.
I've been speaking with John Ray, author most recently of Low Boy, published by Farrar, Straus & Giroux. Thank you for joining me, John.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
You can comment on today's show at kcrw.com/bookworm. You can podcast this program, share it with a friend, or embed it on your blog with a click of a button on our new media player at kcrw.com. My co-producer is Melinda Siegel. Alan Howard is associate producer. The technical director is Mario Diaz. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
Books can be funny, too. Books make you laugh and sing. Books tell you everything. They're your treasured friends in prose and rhyme.
Now it's Book of the Mouse Club time. To the jungles you can go in books.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcast the most recent ones from our website. Go to kcrw.com/bookworm. Plus, copies are available. For ordering information, call 310-450-5183.
Books tell you everything. They're your treasured friends in prose and rhyme. Now it's Book of the Mouse Club.